Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, though, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about planning with Global Chief Marketing Officer of PwC, Antonia Wade, with the founder of Octopus Group, Billy Hamilton Stent, with Chief Marketing Officer at Openjaw Technologies, Colin Lewis, and with the head of marketing at Pay Dashboard, Laura Hughes. Lots to cover, so let's get started. Today, we continue our A to Z of business marketing. We're looking to give a primer on the very latest thinking, practices, and practical examples on every big topic in business marketing land. And we've reached P. P stands for planning. Four experts will talk on the topic today, starting with Global Chief Marketing Officer at PwC, Antonia Wade. Antonia, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you for having me to talk about what is a really very fundamental and important topic when it comes to marketing, which is how do you make sure that your planning is effective and that you drive to get the results that you want? And I guess, whenever we're looking, or I'm looking at my marketing planning cycle, the first thing that I think it's really important to do is to decide what the end game looks like. No good novelist starts writing a book with an idea without an idea of what the end is going to be. And in the same way, as you embark on your planning, really think about upfront, what do you want the end game to be? And make sure that you agree that with all of the stakeholders that you have in the business. And the reason why that's important is it helps you through the year as more and more requests come in to ruthlessly prioritize or reprioritize your plan and make sure that you're still going to deliver what you set out to do. So that end in mind might be, it could be leads, it could be sales, it could be something to do with NPS or loyalty if you're doing account-based marketing, and it might be any number of those things, but to have a really clear sense of what is the end goal and what does that look like from a commercial perspective would be the first place that I would start. I think too, as you're looking at that, it's really important to have a very transparent conversation with the business about what the buyer journey looks like and what are the critical moments in that buyer journey. If you're marketing in professional services, the lead time can be extremely long. But in my past, I've also marketed software where, you know, you're on a 3-month marketing and sales cycle. So it really does vary a lot depending on the complexity of what you're selling, how expensive it is and various other factors, how complicated the procurement cycle is. So it's really well worth thinking about what is it that the buyer needs to do and what's the journey that they're going to go through to get from having a nebulous potential problem that they might need to solve through a refinement process where they decide that they have a very specific set of needs. They then go into the market and look for a supplier that could cater to those needs through the procurement process and then into post-sale. And thinking about, do you have enough content and material to last you through those phases of the buyer journey? And have you planned in enough points so that you know when people are moving from one stage to the next, you're ready enough with the marketing that you have so that you don't have a break in that buyer journey where you simply don't have enough content to make sure that you can kind of fuel the buyer all the way through the buying cycle and through the journey? And I think related to that, it's well worth keeping at the top of mind, what is happening in the client's market that might affect your timing. So from an inside perspective, you'll be wanting to think about how long will it take to sell something? So therefore, what's the optimum time to start marketing it so that you have the best possible opportunity of reaching your revenue targets within the year or within a 5-year cycle or however long you're planning out. But also remember to think about what's the buyer's paradigm. So, you know, you will have within certain industries, there will be parts of the year where they will be much more likely to be in the market to be buying things, and parts of the year where their budgets potentially have all been spent for the year. So if you're marketing and trying to get sales in the point of the year where they've spent their budget, then you probably missed your moment and your marketing won't be as effective. So really thinking about the timing of what you're doing and what's going on in the client or in the buying environment, and how do you use that to optimize and make sure that your marketing is landing at the right point in the year so that it can have the most impact and lead to the most revenue growth. The third thing to think about in my mind is, what are your external opportunities? So you might have marquee events like Davos, for example, is a key one in professional services. Or if you're in the UK, something like Tech UK, if you're in the technology sector, those are external events where you know that your audience is going to be looking to engage with thought leadership and content. And so those are great moments. And so making sure that you work that into your planning cycle. But there's also an opportunity to look at what's going on in the broader world, because of course our buyers are human beings too. So we've just come out of the Euros, you know that the Euros were going to happen. So, you know, you could have, if it was appropriate for your brand and marketing, you could have somehow linked it in a way to the Euros so that you feel very relevant and zeitgeisty for what your clients or market are thinking about outside work. So I'd really encourage you to think about that broader landscape, what are your opportunities to link into those. Once you've decided what it is that you've committed to the business and when those things are going to both happen and when you expect to see the results of those in terms of the things that you're measuring around KPIs, and you know that could be anything, it could be lead, it could be brand awareness metrics, it could be NPS scores. But you make, once you've done that, or as you know that you're on track to that, make sure that you leave a little bit of room for testing and experimentation. And I was talking to my team the other day about how do you make sure that you balance out creativity and innovation with making sure that you do what you say that you'll do. And of course, that will depend from business to business. But I would encourage you to really think about, you know, as you're succeeding in the year because you've done quick planning, that you've really been thoughtful about making sure you've carved out some time or some money to make sure that you can innovate. And as you're delivering your plan, well worth talking to the stakeholders within the business or even the clients directly to see if there are opportunities for you to test and learn along the route. So even if it's down to images, messaging, how the order of content, how you're thinking about structuring your plan, you know, are there ways that you could be A-B testing so that you can be continuously looking to improve what you do? Because I think that whilst you want to be able to plan far out so that you can get a good alignment against what you're doing, good buy-in to what you're doing, and make sure that you have great sustained content through the year, you obviously will need to course correct depending on how your messages are landing in the market. So being really aware of that and leaving opportunities for you to test so you can continually optimize and make those adjustments that will make your marketing more effective. I think that when you're in your planning cycle, making sure that you're really working very closely with the business and in close partnership with them, and having some strong agreements around some of the foundational things that will make your plan successful. So what does a good lead look like? What does a good buyer look like? How, you know, if you're in a more transactional business, how warmed up does a lead need to be? If you're more of a professional services environment, you know, what does, expanding your footprint within an account, maybe accessing new people within a client, what does that actually look like? And then, you know, if you in marketing are proposing, for example, to set up exclusive roundtables with C-suite, are you really lined up with your business partners around who then is taking point on following up and who's making sure that you continue that conversation with the client after the initial marketing investment to make sure that you do realize that return on investment. So I think that really thinking about what are the influencing factors that will make your plan successful, and really thinking about keeping tight hold of your client or your lead the whole way through the year, and who's on point to be maintaining that communication and agreeing what does that look like up front. And that really is part of the key of making sure that you're going to get what you want from your plan. And then I think the last thing, and I think this is particularly pertinent in professional services, but it is relevant in other businesses as well. You know, there's a whole load of things that happen after a sale and with your existing clients, and protecting your clients from your competitors, I think, is an important part of marketing. And you've seen that in the rise of things like account-based marketing. It's very popular at the moment. I was lucky enough to grow up in my career in Accenture. They've effectively invented it. They're very good at it. And it's an incredibly effective tool. But so really making sure that you plan not just for revenue growth, but also revenue protection, and think about how do you make sure that your clients feel like they're a very important part of your ecosystem. And marketing can be a really scalable way of helping your clients feel like they get a lot of value from your organization. So don't forget your existing clients, and don't forget to be continuing to market into them. Different metrics, different reasons for doing it, but don't forget them, because we all know that it costs a lot more to get a new client than to keep an existing client. And it's very rare that you find organizations that have got 100% share of wallet within a client environment. So, you know, you really want to make sure that you're looking after your clients, you're really showing how you can add value to them, but also thinking about how you can bring the best of your organization and more value from your organization into that client account as much as you can. So those, I guess, are the six kind of key points that I would say, keep the end in mind, rethink about the buyer journey and the client's environment, think about what the external market opportunities are for you, make room for testing and experimentation, and make sure you're course correcting your plan. Work in partnership with the business and make sure that you've agreed some of the core principles at the outset. And don't forget your existing clients, because they're precious and you don't want to lose them. So hopefully that's a helpful, practical and pragmatic guide into what I think are some of the effective things that you can do as you're embarking on marketing planning.
What a great start. Global Chief Marketing Officer at PwC, Antonia Wade. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our second planning expert is the founder of Octopus Group, Billy Hamilton Stent. Billy, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. I'm here today to talk, as Dave just said, a little bit about planning. My role as a chief strategy officer, which is my title within Octopus Group, which is a B2B marketing agency, is to create lots of plans for people in various different ways. And I thought the best thing to do for the purposes of the podcast would be to share some of the things that we always ask ourselves as a team in the planning function within our business. And I ask myself, as we're going into planning processes with clients, to make sure that we're doing the best job we can for them. So I thought if I talk you through those, it'd be some useful guidelines for anybody who's in planning mode right now, or looking to, you know, maybe even got a little bit of an eye on next year and what's going to happen with their kind of business marketing needs. Before I do that, the first thing is, planning is strategic, and we define strategy like this. If you get it right, it has exponential value. And if you get it wrong, it causes exponential pain. And I would say that planning is one of those things that there's nothing quite as good as a good plan that is effective. There's a little adage, isn't there? You might hear it from a couple of quarters in these podcasts about as soon as you write a plan, it's out of date. There's something in that for sure. And actually, there's more and more in it as we get into more kind of flexible planning cycles with clients and as businesses in general. But nevertheless, I think that good planning is worth its weight in gold. And we should, you know, really consider that when we're investing time and effort in creating those plans with clients or as the businesses that we serve. So let's get to these points. The first one I thought is, you know, what is a plan? What type of plan are we talking about? We do planning in many different forms as an agency, because we're interfacing into, you know, 20, 30 different organizations as our clients, and they have different needs. And I would say that, you know, planning takes a lot of different shapes and sizes. It can be, you know, a go-to-market plan. There can be digital plans. There can be performance plans, media plans. They might be plans that exist at a global level. They could be derivatives of that at a regional level. It might be for a division in a business. Planning exists at lots of different layers of an organization, even in some relatively small organizations. So the first thing to know is, what type of plan is it? And of course, when you're, I'm speaking here as an agency, you know, denizen really, when a client says we want a go-to-market plan, make sure it's really clear what they mean by that so that you're on the same page, because some of these kind of marketing terminologies get kicked around and you can end up thinking that you're in wild agreement about the job that's right in front of you and soon find out that that's not necessarily the case. So the first question is, and to answer it, what type of plan are we talking about? The second critically important thing I think about planning is, who are the stakeholders? So at what level are we engaging with this business? Who are the people who we need to bring along on the journey of the plan that we're creating? And what is the dynamic between those individuals? Because understanding their expectations and knowing where in the process of creating a plan and ultimately approving it, because principally plans are things that by their nature require some kind of, you know, final point of approval in order to be then actioned. What does that look like? Sometimes you're working directly with a CEO and the executive group. Sometimes that executive group is in, you know, a deep harmony about where they need to go to in the next year from a marketing point of view. Sometimes they're not. So that's a big kind of stakeholder insight. In other scenarios, you might be working with a marketing team and their job is then to take your work and or the work you've collaborated with your client on into a kind of higher realm of the business for approval or for feedback. And again, that might affect how you go into the process. Do you need to bring those senior stakeholders into the experience or the project itself? Do you need to frame things in a certain way so that they understand what's being said? Because there's lots of things that we in marketing talk about and nod along to because we understand them as pretty much jargon. And when they get to the executive level, they can be, misunderstood. And then you can lose some people on the journey. But understanding the stakeholder group and what the expectations are is critical. For example, people might be some clients we work with are very, very data centric in their planning. It could be something that is purely orientated on data. So there needs to be validation and proof of what it is that you're putting forward as the measures that should be taken in a plan. Let's call that plan a go-to-market plan for argument's sake. And that plan will be understood, absorbed and accepted purely on the basis of the numbers that are there and the way that that's been validated. Other organizations can be very different. You know, they might not be so kind of metrics orientated. It might be much more about a positioning or about a strategic direction of travel for that organization. And therefore, that can affect what the sort of constituent parts of that planning is. The third thing, I say we've got, you know, what is the plan? What are the stakeholders? The third thing is, where's the money? Okay, where's the cash that's going to make this plan happen? And you can divide that kind of into two buckets, I think. There's money that's already there and money that would be there if the plan is effective and agreed. And so plans are often used from a marketing point of view as a way of unlocking revenue, which is a great thing for them to do and completely appropriate. But again, it's always really important, I think, to know what point in the budgeting cycle of businesses and where the plan you're creating fits in, because then you can, you know, you can approach the task accordingly and know that, you know, it might well be that the plan that you're creating is a good way from being anything that looks like reality just because of that budgeting cycle. It might be that the budget's completely defined and you're working to some very, very tight parameters on what the, you know, the budgetary expectations are for that particular activation or activity. So where's the money? The fourth one is a bit more complicated, and you wouldn't really know this in practical terms until you get into the project, but it's, what are the dependencies? You know, plans are by their very nature hinged on dependencies. What things have to happen outside of this plan itself in order for these things to work? You know, could be divisions in a business. I've spoken to the fact that it could be budgets. It could be a product launch. There's moving parts in any organization that will affect the beautiful thing you've created as your, let's say again, go-to-market plan working, right? So be really aware of what those are and make sure that the questions are asked about how far out various parts of the dependencies in this plan might move in any given time frame, so that you can be, you know, reasonable about what you might need to adjust in that process. And finally, what's the time frame for completion? And that's not of the plan itself. You know, plans can be 3 months old, 6 months, sorry, 3 months long, 6 months long, a year long or whatever. Maybe 3-5 year business plans as well, of course. But how long have we got to put this plan together? You know, is it like back of a fag packet and it needs to be done next week? Or is it something that's going to take 3 months just to deliver? And we've got the time to invest in, in insight, in research, in primary kind of knowledge acquisition to make it happen. But that's really important too, because it keeps the planning discipline, which can sometimes, it can creep, right? What starts as a plan can end up as something else, but it keeps that discipline and gives you some really clear directives within, you know, your own team or your own planning function to make that happen. So those are our five things. What type of plan is it? Who are the stakeholders? You know, where's the money? What are the moving parts? Where are the dependencies? And how long have we got to put this together? Those are the things that we ask ourselves as an agency to make sure we're doing the best we can for our clients. And then I thought, just as a final point, there are then three questions, right, that I think are really good to ask once you've got through that process. So we're now about to embark upon a beautiful collaborative planning journey with a client organization. The first one is, where's the last plan, right? So where's the last thing that happened, broadly speaking, against this requirement that you did as a business? Not to just obviously copy and paste it into the next iteration, but you can learn a lot from what happened last year, right? And I've been in situations where you think you're coming up with, you know, kind of planning gold, only to discover that it's kind of yesterday's news, as it were. Doesn't happen often, of course, but I've been known for it to happen. Where's the last plan? What is the company used to as a planning engagement, and how does that work? And what do you think looks good and bad about what they did last time? What changes can you make, even to humble things like a template? You know, I mean, it might sound really pedestrian, but where's the last plan? Find it, and it will save you a lot of time. Then I think you have to, speaking really to that point about this dependencies, make sure that whenever you have a plan that is nearing completion, that it has flexibility built in, you know, that there aren't things that if they don't happen, the whole thing falls over. Again, could be a product launch, could be, a new activity for the business, could be a certain set of stakeholders needs to be brought in at a certain time, but make sure that in the planning, you're almost borrowing from those sort of project management mindset and thinking about how flexibility is built into what you have, because you said at the start of the call, plans can get out of date quite quickly, and that need for flexibility is really, really important. And the final question is a really simple one, which is this going to work? Okay. And if you don't feel it is, I can guarantee you it won't. So I think that when you come to the end of a planning process, or maybe it's for an agency, it might be the first time you're showing people the full kind of, you know, result of your labors. It's got to feel right, you know, and for all of the things that are there that might look beautiful, sound eloquent, and with numbers that add up, you have to take a step back, look at the kind of panoramic view of what this requirement is from the business, and say, does this feel like it can work? Because, you know, intuition, as well as data, is a very powerful thing. And if you're doing this stuff all the time, it can be a really good filter. And if the answer is no, then with you and your teammates, you kind of figure out how to get it to work and obviously bring the client into that process. So yeah, three questions are, you know, where's the last plan? How flexible is this plan? Is it going to work? Those would be the things I would leave you with for the podcast today.
Billy Hamilton Stend, thank you very much. Our third planning expert is Chief Marketing Officer of Openjaw Technologies and columnist at Marketing Week magazine, Colin Lewis. Colin, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thank you very much for inviting me to the podcast. Well, I'm going to talk about planning and planning in the world of B2B. You know, with respect to planning, it kind of doesn't matter whether you're in B2B or B2C. A lot of the rules are still the same. But the thing is, a lot of it, there's a lot of fog, a lot of voodoo around it. Planning is really about, it's not that complicated. It's about just applying the basics that we all kind of know and just following them step by step and in the right order. Now, I will say, I am a sinner in this department as well, is sometimes we forget the basics. Sometimes we forget what we actually already know and we get a bit confused, particularly when it comes to planning. So what I'm going to do is, first of all, alleviate you of a little bit of pain by saying, even the people with lots of experience like me, A, forget what we're supposed to do and get panicky about the whole thing. And B, in that moment, in that time, what I want you to do is just say, I need to go back to the basics. Because all we're doing here is systematic application of the basics that you know. And where does that systematic application start with? Well, it's basically we always start with diagnosis. So diagnosis first, strategy and planning thereof second. Now, this is the core, the nub of the problem that we've got. We, and I'm including me in this department here, we tend to go and say, leap into solution thinking, leap into kind of getting answers straight away. And we don't actually get into the detail of diagnosis. And diagnosis is hard. It's particularly hard. Because sometimes we're facing things that we don't really want to see or maybe see. We may be holding up mirrors to ourselves that we don't really like. So what we do is, no matter what we're talking about with planning, we've got to diagnose what's going on. Diagnosis first, planning second. In fact, the origin of the word strategy comes from a Greek word, which was the name for the generals. They were called strategoi. Hopefully my ancient Greek is up to scratch if there's any people who's an expert in ancient Greek. And what they would do is survey the territory. And from that, eventually, the whole world of strategy kind of thereof. And as we know, a lot of strategy comes from military thinking. So, but the first thing they would always do is work out where the territory is, what the lie of the land is. Another one, and this is from my fellow columnist in Marketing Week, he asked the question, he said, you should also know when the financial year is. And it sounds like an odd question, but the start of the financial year is the start of execution. And really what you want to do in a planning context is work back from that. Like the biggest B2C brands like Unilever are actually B2B brands, because what they're doing is selling into the channel for the most part. And their planning session can start maybe up to 7 or 8 months in advance. And they've got a clear set of steps for each of those plans before they get turned to budgets, if it's calendar year around October, November. So planning starts with diagnosis. Think through simple things like your planning year and work back from that. Now, the other thing about planning is also about something that we don't feel that comfortable with is, it's also about choosing the things that you won't do. As we've diagnosed what the challenges are, diagnosed what's going on in the market, diagnosed what our customers are saying, a little element of this is actually choosing what we are not going to do. When we come to our thinking out through our plans, the essence is actually about choosing what to do. If anybody here is familiar with Michael Porter, who's the sort of the doyen of corporate strategy, particularly back in the 80s with his book aptly called Competitive Strategy, his key point is you've got to make choices, and there's things you won't do even though you could do them, because it's about focus. One thing within all this, of course, is, remember I talked about the basics at the outset, I talked about strategy, I talked about diagnosis and so on, is one of the things that will help you with your planning is another thing beginning with beginning with P's. All us marketers know product, price, place, and promotion. And they're all the tactical levers that we have. So if you're ever getting lost and you get confused, I always go, as I said at the outset, go back to the basics, go back to the four P's, and there are the things of which you're going to start your plans around. Plans for product, plans around pricing, plans around place, which we know is distribution, and then plans around how we go to market and activate in terms of promotion. By the way, as an aside, with a lot of our planning, a lot of the discourse in marketing is really a lot around promotion. How do I lead generate? What marketing automation tools should I use? How should I do this? How should I do that? All of those are under the promotion heading. And in reality, for a professional marketer, they should not be more than 10 to 20% of what you are discussing. I'm sure they might take up a lot of time to go boot up and implement. But in terms of planning, what you're going to do is in terms of promotion, in terms of lead generation, in terms of brand propositions, whatever they may be, they are outcomes of all the other three P's and outcomes of all the planning. So it's much lower in the hierarchy in terms of importance. And speaking of things that are like the obvious and the practical places to talk about. Know who you're going to target. Get your segmentation right, because the end of diagnosis is actually great customer segmentation. I meet a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this myself, but I have to keep rowing myself back in, is who are your customer segments? What are the size of those markets? How are we going to target them? Now, within a B2B environment, there's always a little bit of a challenge there. Sales directors and sales managers tend to be quite strong-willed compared to other industries. And we have to be very convincing, and we have to have data to back up our thesis about what we should do with our plans. And one of those is around having excellent data around segmentation. And it's obviously market segmentation is around your customers. It's not necessarily about you or your brand. But what you want to do is get some great segmentation that you can use, because obviously then you can, that leads to who you're going to target by looking at the market. Then you know who your competitors are, and then you can actually start thinking through the plans correctly. Now, one of the other P's subset within planning, if I look at one of the problems that I see all the time, and it's really much more specific than B2C, it's this notion of positioning. And once you know, basically is once you know who you're targeting, who you're going after, and maybe how you could go after them, and the position is what you need to kind of work at. Now, there's a lot of talk around positioning, and there's all layers talked about this, and people use all sorts of crazy words around brand essence and brand this and brand that and so on. What I would encourage you to do is just think about it much more simplistically. And actually, in the last few years, I've kind of freed myself up from a lot of pain points around positioning. What I do is I am following a book called Obviously Awesome by April Dunford. I really recommend that to anybody in the B2B space, because guess what? It's written for people who wish to position in the world of B2B. And she gives a step-by-step approach how to approach positioning, which conveniently for us in our planning call talks about how to target your market, how to understand your target market, what are the attributes that are useful for that market, and then what are the messages that are associated with that market. So I really encourage you to follow a process and around positioning. And April Dunford's Obviously Awesome book is one of the best books around that. So then I want to kind of move on to the kind of final straight here, which is to think in terms of the wider, like the actual thing that we're always associated with, the art of acquiring, converting, and retaining customers. Now, as we set our goals, the first thing we want to understand is planning is not a goal. The idea to increase sales by, say, 20% this year or so on, that's a little bit more what we want to do. And what we always want to do is tie in the more everything that we're doing in terms of objectives and our plans with more sales, more profits, more customers, whatever. But really, our game is around the levers to be pulled. Now, this is quite a challenge, because most people are not in the market for our product at any given time. We all know in the B2B world, there's sales cycles that can be up to a couple of years. For instance, an OpenJob sales cycle can be 2 years. So therefore, point I mentioned a few minutes ago around targeting, you need to think about your targeting with a much more longer term view. And you know, I know it's not just in the business I was in, which is like around technology and travel technology, but banking, legal advice and so on. And many of these are actually even tender driven, and some of these tenders might only come up every couple of years. So what we're trying to do all the time is go, right, our market isn't in the market all the time. Our customer isn't in the market all the time. And so therefore, we've got to think through the world as per our discussions, that the wider discussions in marketing of what I'll call the long and the short of it. Les Burnett and Peter Field obviously been the key people who've come up with this thinking. And obviously, I would encourage you to have a look at Byron Sharp's book, How Brands Grow, and Jenny Romaniuk's Distinctive Assets book as well. Because what they're talking about is this notion of, we need to understand that much of our purchases come from light bars. We need to have long-term positioning, a long-term branding, and kind of, if you will, noise in the market all the time rather than up and down all the time, because most people just aren't in the market for a product. You need to target them with this long-term lens. I'll tell you how I was able to resolve that particular problem, particularly with a sales cycle that was 18 months to 2 years. the channels I really doubled down on were email. I was very consistent, and I was very consistent that in our email, we were always going to create value all the time. That was the number one goal. When we send out an email, we're going to have value creation rather than keep selling. So value creation was 80%, if not 90% of what our content was about. Our content mapped to the fact, knowing the fact that our customers mightn't be in the market for another 2 years, was built deliberately to help them educate them and help them understand how to make a decision for something that's quite high tech, you know, quite difficult to make a decision on. And I actually went over the heads of my sales folks. I ignored what the sales guys were saying because they were saying our customer is a technical customer. And I was like, no, I disagree. I think our customer is a lot less educated than you think they are because they're only making this decision every 3 or 4 years, if even every 3 or 4 years. And so therefore, it may be the first time in their life they're making this decision for this £2 million e-commerce technology or holidays technology. Therefore, we need to have education as part of our core proposition. And so the 20 or so ebooks, presentations, conferences, and so on that we ran over the last 5 years were all about this one thing. How do we educate to ultimately convert in the long term? And how do we make our key USP, our distinctive asset, that we're the best educators and the best content people in the market? Now, it kind of helped that I could write. So I ended up writing a lot of this content myself. The company gets free lunch when one of the key people can write. But that's by the by. What we want to do here is we are thinking of our planning lens. What we want to do is think about it's B2B, it's long-term. How do we be in the market with continuous noise all the time? Aside from email, what I did use was content on LinkedIn, both advertising, but also social selling using the content on our own channels. And again, it was built around this idea of great content, creating great value all the time on a very regular basis, 2 or 3 times a week. Finally, on this point, I want to wrap up. I've actually talked to a few firms now in the last year who've kind of said, hey, Colin, can we get you on the phone and can you tell us what to do with our B2B plans? I pretty much told them exactly what I've told you there. One particular case, a company that was in the legal business, developed a £1 million pipeline on the basis of two-hour phone calls with me following exactly what I've just told you about there. Another business was a technology business that's involved in food ingredients, B2B, long sales cycle. Told them exactly what I've just told you there. They've done that. And again, they developed another big, long pipeline. So it's not just an abstract idea or series of ideas I'm giving you here. These are grounded in the reality of something I've seen 3 times alone in the last 2 years that's developed real revenue, real results, and actually kind of turned these businesses around. And as Jeremy Clarkson might say, on that bombshell, I'd like to say thanks very much for listening to what I'm saying, and thanks very much for listening to the podcast.
That's free consulting there for Mr. Colin Lewis. Colin, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you very much for asking me.
Our fourth planning expert is the head of marketing at Pay Dashboard, Laura Hughes. Laura, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Hi, thanks, Dave. So marketing planning. I mean, like anyone who does one of these BMC podcasts, the first thing I was thinking was, well, what does marketing planning actually mean, and what on earth am I going to talk about? And I came to the quick conclusion that I think that planning really different is totally different for marketers depending on their approach, their company, and what their role is. Whether you think of planning as your budget or your resources or campaigns or forecast, it really depends on you and your business. So the story that I'm going to tell today is a bit about how marketing planning has changed for me over the years in the role that I'm currently in, depending on the situation and external pressures in the business. So for me, I'm the head of marketing at an SME tech company called Pay Dashboard. I've been with the company since the beginning. Back in 2015, I joined as the first full-time employee. We now have 18 people in the business, of which 3, including myself, are in the marketing team. And we're heavily focused on lead generation and building our revenue pipeline, as are most kind of small SMEs and marketing teams within them. So the way in which I approach marketing has changed so much over the 6 years that I've been in my role, but it's always been driven by what stage our business was at that time. when I was the only marketer in the company, there wasn't really much of a marketing plan. As the first employee at Pay Dashboard, my marketing plan was really just a to-do list. You know, we needed a website, we needed social media accounts, we needed buyer personas, we needed some basic sales collateral. So each day my planning was merely prioritizing what needed to be done and what order that needed to happen in. And that was the case for quite a long time. And that does create a problem as a marketer, because when it's just you yourself that you need to organize and coordinate, there's less impact when there's no plan. You can get caught up in just delivering the day-to-day needs, or to be honest, whatever you feel like doing that particular day, without any kind of overall vision or direction. When we finally recruited someone else into my team, it was such a bizarre shift for me, because not only did I have to plan my own work and priorities, I had to consider my new team member. How did what I was going to ask them to do tie in with what I was doing? Was it clear to them why I was asking them to do this? Did they understand how their work fitted in with the bigger picture? Did they understand how delivering their work affected potentially my ability to deliver mine, or vice versa? Not only that, but at the same time, we had increased headcount in the sales team. And like many B2B companies, our sales team rely heavily on marketing to drive demand at certain times in the year. So I had a sales team who wanted to know what we were planning so they could plan their own activity. You know, when were they needed on campaign follow-up? When was there going to be a lull in the marketing-driven activity that they would need to supplement with their own sales-driven outreach? So suddenly, I needed more of a proper plan than just a to-do list. And it really represented a step change in marketing in the business and for me personally. So we shifted to a more structured plan. We set out a headline plan for the year ahead with key campaign themes running through certain time periods. So we knew key dates in the calendar. We planned around external events that we were sponsoring, and we had our first formal annual marketing plan. And we presented this to the sales team at the annual kickoff meeting. And I sat back for the first time and I thought, yes, this is sorted. 2020 is going to be our year. And as you can probably predict, that really didn't last long. But here's where I think all those years of not having a plan finally paid off. We had, like many marketers, a third of our budget and our activity was tied up in external events. And suddenly overnight, our beautiful marketing plan was burning in tatters on the floor. There were two of us in the team at that point, and my new team member had only been with the company for 4 months. Suddenly, we're no longer able to be in the same office to collaborate. Our industry was in complete disarray. We sell payslip software, and our clients and prospects providing payroll services, they were in pieces about this newfangled scheme called furlough, having to work from home, which was quite unusual in the sector at the time, and also the uncertainty for their own business and their own clients. Alongside that, we had the business continuity communications to our own clients. We had to step in to support some of our clients to expedite their rollout of our software because they needed to move away from paper payslips. So that was all stuff that marketing was really integral in and that we had to step in and support with communications and collateral. So we could have stuck to our campaign plan rigidly. We could have tried to adapt it to fit the new world that we sort of found ourselves in. But we didn't. We scrapped it and we went back to the drawing board. One, what does the business need us to do? Two, how can we do that with a totally digital approach? Three, how can we do that on a shoestring? Because like most companies, we've been asked not to spend unnecessarily until we know what on earth is going on with the world. And four, who's going to do it? And those four questions really formed our marketing plan for 2020. So our plan out the window, we had daily morning catch-ups as a marketing team where we worked out what we needed to do that day and who was going to need what. With this lack of plan and lack of visibility of a plan, and also to avoid wasting putting together a plan and all the time that would put together and having to communicate that to the team. At the end of every day, we sent a daily update to key stakeholders in the business about what we delivered that day and what we were working on. We scrapped our kind of campaign planner and we reverted more to a task and resource planner. So we took inspiration from our development team and we treated each month as like a sprint. We listed out all the tasks we knew we needed to do as if they were user stories on a development board. We put a time estimate on them, we prioritized them, and then we worked out how much time we had available and what we were going to do in that time. Now, this was very much a short-term initiative to help us with very tactical micro-planning, and it's not something I would ever really recommend as a solution when you're looking at your sort of macro-level planning. But then as things calmed down, we moved from daily updates to, you know, a couple of times a week, and then eventually to just Friday afternoons. And we probably got back on top of things around June 2020. But we were still being very reactive, only planning campaigns a week or two in advance in case things changed. Over a year on, it's been a really conscious effort to move away from that very reactive approach to being proactive and actually having a proper plan. Getting the team to plan ahead again has been a real challenge. So I've helped to readjust this mindset in the team by moving their weekly one-to-one catch-ups with me to a Friday afternoon. And at this catch-up, we only look very briefly at their progress for the week, talking about any blockers they've encountered. But they, as part of that meeting, share their plan with me for the week ahead, which means that they're going into the end of Friday thinking ahead to what they need to do next week. We can then go through this on Friday afternoon in their one-to-one, address any prioritization questions or issues. And then they go away for the weekend and come back on Monday with their plan already in place and ready to crack on. This has worked really well as a tactic to move us away from that very reactive approach to having a more proactive planning mindset. We've now got our annual plan again, so we know what we want to do for the year ahead. We're only planning each quarter in detail in the sort of month or two leading up to the quarter so that we don't invest too much time and effort in something that might go out the window in autumn if COVID sort of rears its head again. And we've presented this back to the wider team. Fingers crossed we'll be able to stick to it this year. But if something changes, we won't be afraid to change our plan and go back to the drawing board in order to deliver the marketing that our business needs at that point in time. So I guess to conclude, our approach to marketing planning has always been very much driven by the needs of the team and the needs of the business. And while a plan is great, particularly when you've got multiple moving parts and you need to keep everyone focused on track, sometimes the right plan is just today's plan. So my advice, particularly if you're a small company like mine, don't feel that you need to have a detailed 12 or 24 month marketing plan if you don't really need it. Have the marketing plan that's suitable, scalable, and appropriate for the business that you're in, and then just be prepared to take a different approach if your business needs it.
So you've been warned the next global crisis is imminent because Laura Hughes and her team have got a new plan. Laura Hughes, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Antonia Wade, Billy Hamilton-Sten, Colin Lewis and Laura Hughes. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Thanks to you for listening too. Do rate or review us if you can and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.